Christian Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Joy Unspeakable, Contemplative Practices of the Black Church, Second Edition, by Barbara A. Holmes, narrated by Michelle Williams. Preface to the Second Edition. If the ghost hunters snuck up behind me as I was trying to write, they might see a universe of slave liberators, political agitators, Baptist preachers, exuberant orators, beloved writers, and incomparable musicians, so many musicians, arrayed around me all in chorus, urging and cajoling and daring me to somehow dig a little deeper. Torre. I write in a moment of time with the television muttering in the background, ancestors dictating and peering over my shoulder while my fingers fly over the keyboard. I am trying to translate what I hear into what can be read. 13 years ago, in 2004, I wrote Joy Unspeakable. Oh, how time flies. Joy was written before Obama, before the Arab Spring, before Black Lives Matter, before we knew that not only would the revolution be televised, it would be waged on social media. The first edition of Joy was my witness to contemplation as an unexamined aspect of Black religious life. At the time, so much had been written about the Black church, its denominations, practices, worship, and preaching, that there seemed to be little left to say, and even less that was unexamined. But Black religious life in America is complicated. It is both invisible and the object of stereotypical common knowledge. Too often its complexities are hidden in plain sight, and yet I knew from the traditions and stories of the elders, from my participation in mystical spiritual practices in diverse settings, that Black religious life includes abiding, contemplative practices. These practices were explored culturally and historically in the first edition. This new edition includes several updated and 2 new chapters. In Chapter 7, Black Lives Matter and the Black Church, 21st Century Contemplative Activism, I consider the emergence of the Black Lives Matter movement and its challenge to white supremacy and to the Black Church. In the silent aftermath of the Civil Rights Movement, another generation of activists emerge to challenge the violence of the police against unarmed members of the community. They have freedom songs that the media seldom records. They use the language of faith, but reject the misogyny and heteronormativity of the Black church. This chapter suggests that the contemplative practices of the Black Lives Matter movement are part of the lineage of Black communal and church traditions. In Chapter 8, Deep Rivers, the Contemplative Presidency of Barack Hussein Obama, I explain the contemplative formation of President Barack Obama during his years as a community organizer and during his mentoring at Trinity UCC under the Reverend Dr. Jeremiah Wright. I also include a section titled, Look at Her Arms, on Michelle Obama's contemplative witness of Black feminine embodiment. Finally, in the last chapter, I expand my review of art and contemplation by considering the contemplative underpinnings in the music and personal profiles of current artists. Since 2004, everything has changed and nothing has changed. In the aftermath of the first Black presidency, African American citizens are experiencing a reprise of state-sponsored and street violence against another generation of young Black minority women and men. The bombing of a gay nightclub in Orlando indicates that hatred is as virulent as it was in decades past. The 2016 election of Donald Trump, the rise of the alt-right, and the denial of environmental decline are all stunning signs of the times. Given where we are, contemplative practices must do more than offer respite and space for retreat. We need healing practices and transformative responses to issues that continue to divide our society. We need to provide a platform for intergenerational dialogue and support for communities under siege. Only time will tell if contemplative practices will help to shift the paradigm of oppression. Right now, joy is truly unspeakable, but I have faith that soon, and very soon. I am grateful for my editor, Michael Gibson, and my husband, George, who revived my joy, and for the great cloud of witnesses who lean into the writing with me. Preface to the First Edition. This book focuses on the aspects of the Black Church that point beyond particular congregational gatherings toward a mystical and communal spirituality, not within the exclusive domain of any denomination. This mystical aspect of the Black Church is deeply implicated in the well-being of African American people, but is not the focus of their intentional reflection. Moreover, its traditions are deeply ensconced within the historical memory of the wider society and can be found in Coltrane's riffs and Malcolm's exhortations, in the stepbrothers' dance routines, and the fortitude of Thurgood Marshall. Today, increasing numbers of young people believe that the Black Church exists in a time warp, with slavery as its originating marker and civil rights as its culminating goal. Their history lessons have taught them that the Black Church is situated in a particular historical framework. But they also know that its traditions seldom include the concerns of a generation suckled on hip-hop terror and economic instability. Nevertheless, there is a timelessness at the center of Black Church practices that exceeds its history and deserves further exploration. I am speaking of a shared religious imagination that manifests as the communal intent to sustain one another and journey together toward joy despite oppressive conditions. This book at first appeared to be a major change in the focus of my work. For the last few years, I have been thinking about the cosmos and our place in it. From black holes to dark matter, I considered the cosmological aspects of Africana identity that were masked by discrete social and racial categories. Given the magnitude of these concerns and the work that is yet to be done, I wondered why this new book was shifting my focus from the universe to the pew, from the galaxies to the hush arbors. As the writing progressed, I realized that I was grappling with yet another piece of the identity puzzle. Although the context in this book is congregational, the questions I bring to the task are familiar. Each of my books focuses on a taken-for-granted element of Africana life that has the potential to promote the flourishing of the immediate community and the extended family of God. My first book was a study of prophetic proclamation in the speeches of Barbara Jordan, whose pragmatic discourses integrated religion, ethics, and law. Her willingness to speak truth to power, from the liminal stance of black, female, segregated personhood, elucidated the power of ordinary people to discursively carve hope from static and oppressive conditions. In Race and the Cosmos, I suggested that the languages of theoretical physics and cosmology could explain limited social constructions of identity, power, and race. In this book, I am bringing contemplation into focus as an important, taken-for-granted worship legacy in the historical Black Church. I am also identifying the sacred territory of inner cosmologies and the spiritual locus of past microcosms of protection and communal formation. Those who study contemplation as a practice or religious experience soon find that they are engaging geo-spiritual spaces that have the potential to ease post-modernity's striving and disassociation. Perhaps through this retrieval of the contemplative practices of the Black Church, the transracial and diversity-based community called Beloved will come into view. The historical Black Church is the necessary matrix for this work. I am aware that the phrase historical Black Church can be problematic when it is used to gloss over complex and multifaceted worship choices. Accordingly, I am using the phrase as a cultural reference point that may illuminate or impinge upon a historical trajectory, but is not limited to those disciplinary boundaries. This book is a reflective turn toward practices that emerge out of the collective imagination of the worshiping community. I've named these practices contemplative because they create intersections between inner cosmologies and the interpretive life of a community. The task is to reclaim the powerful interiority ensconced in the memories and practices of the historical Black church, in the narratives of daily life, and in the vibrancy of Africana aesthetics. This is a legacy for future generations that must be identified before it can be bequeathed. Communal contemplative practices in Africana contexts have been hidden from view by the exigencies of struggle, survival, and sustenance. As a consequence, there have been scant opportunities to reflect on the journey. But the time for reflection has come. What makes our future together possible is our ability to contemplate, to consider events and their meanings in narrative, cosmological, and historical contexts. I am suggesting that ensconced within the framework of vibrant religious practices are tangible reminders that our lives are communal liturgies. We respond to a deeply interdependent and responsive universe through shared experiences. This means that despite signs of postmodern fragmentation and the rise of radical individualism, we cannot carve out shared destinies in isolation. We are born not only into a wondrous and mysterious life space, but also into communities of interpersonal reliance. These communities of care and crisis lend meaning and congruence to our lives and help to shape our collective stories. These stories and learned practices disclose the pitfalls and potential for human fulfillment, but more importantly, they describe a cosmos that is interwoven with mystery. Unfortunately, we have few devices to handle the eruption of spiritual events into our ordinary lives. When they occur, we are forced to reassess our taken-for-granted presumptions about the world. However, our assessments can further marginalize the events and those who claim to have them. If you listen to testimonies of immediate and personal spiritual experiences, you will inevitably hear spectator language that describes disruptive spiritual exotica. The presumption is that these moments cannot be easily interrogated and that they are not subject to the type of reflection that yields enlightenment or insight. Moreover, the impact of these ineffable moments on individual seekers further privatizes the religious experience in ways that undermine the interpretive power of a community. By contrast, the communal contemplative practices of the Black Church provide an interpretive grid that synthesizes inner and outer cosmologies. It is the community and not the individual monastic that becomes the concern. The spiritual practices become public theology through acts of shared liturgical discernment. These acts of shared contemplation move individual mystical events from the personal and private toward the public and pragmatic. Accordingly, the inward journey transcends the private imagination to become an expanded communal testimony. I am contending that communal contemplation is richer than the immediacy of personal experience, because the experience, the story, the event is subjugated to the gaze of both the individual and the community. In Africana and other indigenous cultures, this unique orientation toward the sacred elements of life begins at a very young age. Children soon learn that when events surprise, frighten, or mystify them, they can face the unknown with a discerning community. It has only taken a few generations to lose sight of this integral aspect of Africana community life. Such losses can result from inclusion/integration into dominant cultural paradigms. The price for full acceptance is often cultural and spiritual amnesia. Moreover, communal contemplation takes focus, centering, energy, and concentration. These are orientations that tend to be displaced in the struggle of upward mobility. The price of inclusion turns out to be the loss of the communal reflective gaze, the interpretive moment, the pause for a fresh wind of the spirit. It is this collective contemplative gaze in Africana contexts, worship, and community life that is the focus of this book. The contemplative practices of the Black Church are steeped in the stories of transcendence and transformation that have the potential to reinvigorate community life and to flesh out the character of Black humanity with phenomenological detail and communal wisdom. I am offering an understanding of contemplation that depends upon an intense mutuality, shared religious imagination, and the free flow of interpretation within the context of a vibrant and lived theology. Lived theology is a contextual and dialogical process that is always enhanced by a responsive and collegial community. I am grateful to the Louisville Institute for the general grant that supported the research for this book, and to Michael West, Beth Wright, and Fortress Press for their confidence in this project. I also want to acknowledge the Lived Theology Project, directed by Charles Marsh, for initiating remarkable colloquies focused on experiential and lived theology, as well as the late Reverend Nesby Alston, Paul Dekar, Anthea Butler, Victor Anderson, Valerie Bridgman, Stephen G. Gray, Cheryl Kirk Duggan, Waldo E. Knickerbocker, Barry Bryant, Steve Edscorn, and many others who contributed to the completion of this manuscript. Writing is a blessed wilderness experience. I am grateful for friends and family who journey with me. Joy unspeakable is not silent. It moans, hums, and bends to the rhythm of a dancing universe. It is a fractal of transcendent hope, a hologram of God's heart, a black hole of unknowing. For our free African ancestors, joy unspeakable is drum talk that invites the spirits to dance with us and tell tall tales by the fire. For the desert mothers and fathers, joy unspeakable is respite from the maddening crowds and freedom from church as usual. For enslaved Africans during the Middle Passage, joy unspeakable is the surprise of living one more day and the freeing embrace of death chosen and imposed. For Africans in bondage in the Americas, joy unspeakable is that moment of mystical encounter when God tiptoes into the hush arbor, testifies about divine suffering, and whispers in our ears, "Don't forget, I taught you how to fly on a wing and a prayer. When you're ready, let's go." Joy unspeakable is humming, "How I Got Over," and swimming safely to the other shore of a swollen Ohio River when you know that you can't swim. It is the blessed assurance that Canada is far, but not that far. For Africana members of the Invisible Institution, the emerging Black Church, joy unspeakable is practicing freedom while chains still chafe, singing deliverance while Jim Crow stalks, trusting God's healing and home remedies, prayers, kerosene, and cow patty tea. For the tap dancing, boogie woogie, rap rock blues griots who also hear God, joy unspeakable is that space-time joy continuum thing that dares us to play and pray in the interstices of life. It is the belief that the phrase, "the art of living," means exactly what it says. Joy unspeakable is both fire and cloud, the unlikely merger of trance and high-tech lives, ecstatic songs and a jazz repertoire. Joy unspeakable is a symphony of incongruities, of faces aglow and hearts on fire, and the wonder of surviving together. Introduction. An Unlikely Legacy. O Jesus. The soloist moves toward the center of the podium. The congregation of about 1,500 breathes with her as she moans, "O, O, O Jesus." Those are the only words to the song. Unless you are sitting within the sound of her voice, it is difficult to imagine how a song of two words can be a cry of anguish, balm, and celebration. In each soaring note, we participate in the unutterable spectrum of human striving. In this world you will have trouble, but oh, 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 Jesus. The shouts of exaltation give no indication of what is happening. Although it appears to be the usual charismatic congregational fare, in fact, we are riding the stanzas through time to the hush arbors and swamp meetings, over the dangerous waters to safety. In this ordinary Sunday service, Something has happened, and we are changed. The worldly resistance to transcendence that we wore into the sanctuary has cracked open, and the contemplative moment carries us toward the very source of our being. Moments like this occur regularly in the Black Church. Yet if you ask congregants about their contemplative practices, they would be confounded. When I began this project, colleagues warned that there were no such practices. Despite numerous exceptions, Black church worship is known for its heartfelt, rhythmic, and charismatic character. This depiction has become such an accepted view that contemplative practices remain a subliminal and unexamined aspect of Black religious life. As a consequence, the practices are not nurtured, encouraged, or passed on to future generations. Yet, when contemplative moments occur, worship experiences seem to deepen. A restless longing. The experience that I have just described was not expected. The worship was inspirational. The singer was extremely skilled. Everyone present enjoyed the music, but there was more. In the midst of worship, an imperceptible shift occurred that moved the worshiping community from intentional liturgical action to transcendent indwelling. There is no way to describe this shift other than to say that something happened. During this sacred time, the perpetual restlessness of the human heart was stilled and transformed into abiding presence. Time shimmered and paused, slowing its relentless pace, and the order of worship no longer took precedence for those enthralled by a joy unspeakable. The church where this service was held is Mississippi Boulevard Christian Church in Memphis, Tennessee, led, at that time, by Dr. Frank A. Thomas. This church was unusual in that it incorporated intentional contemplative practices into its worship services. The service began with holy hush as the people entered. They were encouraged to center themselves and pray. While an elder read the names of the sick and bereaved, the congregants, elders, and pastors circled and prayed in small groups. At the end of the service, spiritual leaders lined the altar, ready to receive those who needed individual prayer and attention. This model of worship is no longer prevalent. Today, worship services move at such a pace that often there seems to be no space or time for the congregation to unify in spirit. In times past, the old folks would tarry, pray, and rest in the presence of one another until the lover of their souls joined them. Those elders who remember these Africana worship practices know that something is missing today. Perhaps missing is not the right word. As noted in my opening example, contemplative practices still exist in the Protestant Black Church, but they have not been consciously embraced and nurtured as necessary and important aspects of worship. The lack of contemplative abiding time creates a restless longing in the people. At first, I attributed my sense of spiritual incompleteness to the rigors of a lifelong spiritual quest and to faith needs that tend to be electric and complex. To complete the passionate weekly liturgy, I need moments of spiritual indwelling to be as integral to worship as the shout. Unrelenting praise teams modeled after cheerleading squads do not satisfy this need. Although there are many other religious traditions that value and teach contemplation, moving to one of these traditions is not an option for me. For some of us, church and culture are so intertwined in Black church worship services that to leave one is to be cut off from significant aspects of the other. Yet, when I talk to other members of the Black church community, I am struck by similar whispered concerns about this missing dimension. From religious scholars in the academy to lay evangelists in storefront churches, folks ponder the possibility of becoming unchurched. Those who are unwilling to make such a drastic decision find themselves disengaging from the Black church community as a last resort to resolve the emptiness that claims them as soon as they leave services for the parking lot. Some hop from church to church, seeking and not finding, but most just accept the subtle spiritual changes as a sign of the times. The ecclesial response to this complaint is that one must participate fully to get something out of the service, and those who come desperately seeking often find themselves being told that their lack of fulfillment at the end of the service is their own fault. I have no doubt that the church is as frustrated as the seekers. It yearns to fulfill the needs of the people, but often uses tools that are no longer efficacious for the tasks at hand. The people are in pain. They are suffering from a kind of post-traumatic stress syndrome as a result of decades of denigration. Now that they are ostensibly free, they yearn to receive the peace that surpasses all understanding. Yet they may have preconceived notions of how the peace will come and where it will come from. All of these issues are hidden from plain sight, so that few realize that there is unhealed brokenness in every pew and pulpit. The underlying bleakness of contemporary congregational life is masked by increasing technological advancements and business savvy in religious circles. On the surface, things have changed for the better. At most Black church services across denominational lines, music is of professional quality, choirs are uplifting and skilled, preachers are articulate and well-trained. Yet the sense of centered belonging in a community that provides spiritual sustenance and intergenerational continuity has become drastically attenuated. I am suggesting that this sense of centered belonging can be located in the contemplative spiritual legacy of Africana people. This legacy is particularly treasured and nurtured in Catholic traditions. Although Black Catholics also struggle for racial and cultural inclusion, they have fostered and retained the contemplative aspects of their faith. Under the broad umbrella of Black church traditions, Black Catholics also find their place. As M. Shaw Copeland notes, Black religion is an historical phenomenon, neither Protestant nor Catholic, normatively centered in an African worldview, even if the language of its expression and the symbols of its ritual are Christian in inspiration, and in fact, even if the very features of the Christianity peculiar to the enslaved peoples masked their Africanicity. M. Shaw Copeland suggests, and I agree, that Black religion is characterized by its theological diversity and its broad spectrum of cultural nuances. Accordingly, Catholic, Orthodox, Islamic, and Protestant sources are important to this book. However, I am focusing this study on the contemplative legacy of the Protestant segment of the historical Black church, because it is within this cultural bastion that the greatest losses have occurred. For Black Protestants, contemplative practices are no longer within the critical or reflective grasp of the community. Contemplating the Invisible Institution. In days gone by, overtly contemplative events were not unusual in Black church congregations, who gathered for the specific purpose of evoking the presence of the Holy Spirit. Moreover, transcendence was as integral to congregational life as the reading of announcements. When we were all gathered on one accord, the Spirit would descend upon the worshipers, inhabiting their bodies and lifting them out of the ordinary for a brief time. Today, those moments occur less frequently in the Black church. At this point, it would be helpful to explain my usage of certain terms. I use the term African American to refer to the African diaspora community in the United States, and the term Africana to denote Africans in various global contexts. The phrase Black church is used in theological circles to describe many different aspects of Africana worship life. However, I am specifically referring to a dynamic religious entity forged in oppression and sustained by practices that were often covert and intuitive. All who have lived within its embrace know that the historical Black church exceeds its walls, preachers, ideology, denominational focus, and Protestant-Catholic differences. Most would agree that the Black church was crucial to the survival of Africans in the United States. However, I take seriously Dolores Williams's distinction between the Black church and African-American denominational churches. Contrary to the nomenclature in current Black theological, historical, and sociological works, the Black Church is not used to name both the invisible Black Church and the African.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?